You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern and 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us all of your texts, all of your voicemails, maybe from the reaction from the games this weekend, or what we've got on deck this week. We'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369 is the place to do it. Matt, welcome back from the weekend. A little bit disappointing with the Bulls' performances here, but nonetheless, did you get any? Did you go out on Black Friday at all? Did you get any good deals this weekend? I know probably a lot of our listeners did, but are you somebody who goes out and ventures on Black Friday?
Hell no, man. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Nah, man. I used to spend many Black Fridays working retail back in my youth, so I avoid that stuff as much as possible these days now that I am no longer working in retail. Thank God. No, I might do some Cyber Monday shopping online today from the comfort of my own home, especially with this blizzard that got dumped on us last night. No, man, if you're out there actually shopping in malls and things today, I think you're freaking nuts.
I think it's wild, people who still are lining up for hours. Like, I can remember the times where the TVs were super cheap, and that was the point for lining up. But it's like now you can find everything online, everything you need, and arguably some of the deals online are better than they are on Black Friday itself. So I don't know, it's wild to me too. I didn't do any of that either. I usually do. Like sometimes I'll go out on, even on Thanksgiving, I think I went out a few years to get a pair of headphones. But yeah, other than that, like you can get most of it online now at a probably even cheaper rate than you can if you have to stand in line. So
nobody is as prepared as this guy. This is number one in line. This is Jarvis Johnson. Don't forget his name. Jarvis, why are we camped out already?
Because they got great deals on Black Friday, and I want to be number one in line, which I am number one already. So right now, this is my grand tour. I have my microwave right here. I have my TV right here. I have my ice chest with my food in it. I have my table. I have my electricity.
You got some Wi-Fi in here?
I ain't got no Wi-Fi. I'm trying to get some. I'm trying to get some out here.
So how did you get this idea to camp out a full week before Black Friday?
I have been doing it for 8 years, and I've gotten smarter every year. The early bird gets the worm.
Let's jump into these Bulls games. So the Heat game, let's talk about that first, and then we'll jump into the Timberwolves game in the second segment, and then we'll wrap up the show talking about the Spurs tonight. So the Bulls, as ugly as that first half and even that second quarter was on Friday, the Bulls made a nice effort to try and make this one close. They were down as much as 26 at one point and were able to pull it in within single digits. They ended up losing 103-96 to the Heat, but what about that second half adjustment that the Bulls made that made you have a little bit of hope coming into Saturday and at least the weekend? Because the first half was just god-awful and ugly. At least they battled back a little bit to make things happen.
Yeah, I mean, give some credit where it's due to Jabari Parker, who had, you know, another solid game in this one. 23-10 he finishes with on 8 of 18. And, you know, the key is that Jabari, I believe, started that game like 0 for 8 or 0 for 9, you know, had a goose egg in the first quarter. And actually, we've usually seen the opposite from Jabari, where he comes in, has a strong first quarter, pours in 10 to 15 points, and then totally disappears as the game goes on. Jabari was a part of the crew that helped the Bulls get back into this game. But the fact that they had to get back in this game from the depths of where they were, to me, is the bigger story. Because there it was, the second quarter, 32-13. The Bulls have had these quarters, they've been plagued by these quarters all season long, where they are a turnover-prone mess that misses shots, takes bad shots, and then hangs their heads when the offense falls apart and lets that affect their effort on the defensive end. Fred Hoiberg has talked about it. LaVine has talked about it. Everybody's been talking about it. Wendell Carter has talked about it. When the offense sputters, they fall apart on defense too. And this team, as shorthanded as they are, do not have any room for error. But we've seen quarters like that in, I'd say, probably a third of the games they've played so far. And guess what? All of those games, they're
losses.
It's
kind of crazy in a game where the Bulls, for the first time, I think, this season, actually out-rebounded a team 52-48 against the Miami Heat, who looked like, you know, especially in that first half, Hassan Whiteside looked like he was taking over the game, and he kind of cooled off at the end with 18-10. He had four blocks, though, much of which came in the first half. I was very surprised, though, like, shocked that the Bulls were able to turn it around as fast as they did in the second half. They came off a third quarter of 30-18 and then 27-25 in the fourth. But you're right. Like, anytime this second unit comes in, and we know this, just if you've been paying attention at all this year, you know this, that when that second unit comes in, there's nobody on that second unit that can score. Outside of Blakeney, who's been bad recently, like over the last week, week and a half, he's been terrible. He comes off the bench and just chucks up a bunch of mid-range twos that aren't very good, aren't very effective. He did that on Friday night. He was 0-for-6. Shaq Harrison was 0-for-7. Felicio was 0-for-1. And Robin Lopez was the only person on that team that could score, coming off the bench 25 minutes, 4-for-9 from the field with 9 points. But it's a common theme now. It's like if you don't get points from Justin Holiday, Jabari Parker, Zach LaVine, you're basically not getting points on this team. And you notice that not only from this Heat game, not only from the Timberwolves game, which was even more evident, but just go back and look at the last week and a half, 2 weeks of what the Bulls have played. If you're not getting production from LaVine, Holiday, and Parker, this game is a blowout. And that's got to change.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the lack of productivity from the bench. The Bulls bench in that game against the Heat Friday night outscored 11-37. Like, that is a team. And look, Miami is shorthanded too. Like, they're a team that's dealing with some injuries to some players. And it's not like their bench is, it's not like they're one of the deepest teams in the league. Yeah, Dwayne Wade came in off the bench, chipped in 10 points in 24 minutes. But, you know, that's not huge by itself. But Adebayo, 14. Justice Winslow, 10. Like, they had real guys chipping in off the bench, and because the Bulls are just so shorthanded right now, like you said, if a guy like Blakeney is not hitting his shots, if Shaq Harrison, who is certainly stronger on the defensive end, is not doing things on the offensive end, if Robin Lopez, you know, like, Robin Lopez was the most efficient scorer off the Bulls bench on Friday night, and that is not a good thing.
Crazy when you think about Robin Lopez and what he's done this year. And, you know, even listening to some of the opposing broadcasters, I always get interested to hear what they talk about with the Bulls. And I was listening to the Heat broadcast and the Timberwolves broadcast, and something that they were talking about was one of the broadcasters was shocked that Robin Lopez was under 10 points per game this year. And if you follow the Bulls at all, obviously that's the case, because he got demoted. And him coming back has kind of resurged him a little bit. Obviously, the talent and the production isn't at the level it was maybe 2 years ago when he was here. That's fine. But you're getting more out of him than you're getting out of Felicio. And I got to ask you a question about Felicio really quick. Do you think Fred Hoiberg is doing this whole thing, running Felicio out there? I know he only played a minute on Saturday. He checked in, like, real quick. And then he didn't get a whole lot of time on Friday, but is he going to be a case where, similar to campaign, I'm just going to continue to throw him out there until we've got other options, these guys coming back from injury. I'm just going to continue to throw you out there until the point where, you know, everybody around here is going to say, okay, he's pretty much unplayable. And that's sort of what they did to campaign. You know, as bad as it was watching him go out there and start night after night, Fred Hoiberg basically put him in a situation where he was like, here, you prove yourself. And if you're bad enough, it's going to show to the point where I'll be justified to DNP you or just not play you at all. So do you think that similar situation is going on with Felicio? Because he's going to be here for two
Well,
more
I mean,
years.
When it comes to Cam, the only reason that he's gotten 5 to 10 minutes over the last stretch of games is because Chandler Hutchison has been out with back spasms. So as soon as Hutch is ready to go, you got to assume that Fred is going to put campaign back on that DNP list. Because guess what? Those small ball lineups that Fred has had to use for certain stretches of games where it's like he's playing campaign, Shaq Harrison, Archie, and or Blakeney, three of those four on the floor at the same time, the Bulls are getting eaten alive on the inside. It's awful. It's terrible. So as soon as Hutch comes back and they can actually play him some minutes at the wing, Cam's going back to DNPs. As far as Felicio, the only reason he's gotten minutes, and look, he only got 1 minute of junk time at the end of the game on Saturday because the Bulls were blown out. Friday night, the only reason he got 6 minutes is because Wendell Carter Jr. once again got into early foul trouble, and then his replacement, Robin Lopez, also got into foul trouble. That is the only reason that Felicio has gotten minutes recently is foul trouble to the two guys ahead of him in the rotation. So as soon as Bobby Portis is ready to roll, as soon as Markkanen comes back and this front court has two of its best pieces in the fold, not only is Felicio going to be sitting and not getting any minutes, Robin Lopez minutes are probably going to take a hit too.
Yeah, I'd imagine once Portis and Markkanen both come back, you know, you're going to see both of them in there get high-quality minutes. Same thing with Parker when being able to mix him up, and same thing with Wendell Carter Jr. And the fact that you can – that I wouldn't be surprised once Markkanen comes back, settles in a little bit, that you see him shift it from the four to the five. Same thing with Portis switching him from the four to the five. Like you said, I think Robin Lopez's minutes are going to get cut. I still think he's – shown enough now over the last 2 weeks after that benching, saying he was kind of frustrated with his role. They went with Felicio. Felicio played awful, and it got to a point where it's like, okay, we need somebody who can sit around and protect the rim and at least bang bodies. Robin came back and did that and actually has been halfway decent in the stretches he's played, and it's come out of, like you said, more necessity than anything else. But I was curious about Felicio because that's kind of what Fred did with Cam. It was like, I'm going to just, even though I do need him, I just need bodies on the floor. At this point, though, I'm just going to throw him out there to the point where he's going to make enough mistakes where everybody's going to look and say, okay, now you can justify yourself of DMPing him because he's just been god-awful. So I think that's kind of in line with what Felicio's getting here, but I don't see him being any part of this conversation once the two other guys get healthy. Anything else from this Heat-Bulls game, though, that you wanted to quickly wrap up? Khalil Mack was in attendance on Friday nights. I thought that was kind of cool. He actually, surprisingly, and another reason why to love Khalil Mack is even though the Bulls were getting their heads beat in the first half, he stuck around for that second half. And most celebrities, most people have better things to do than hang around and watch a terrible Bulls team get their heads kicked in at the United Center on a Friday night. But he hung around for the entire game.
Well, you know why? You know why he
did
that?
His buddy D. Wade?
Yeah, he wanted to get a jersey autographed by D. Wade. You know, and whatever, D-Wade is a diehard Bears fan. He's been tweeting, you know, before and after all these Bears games all season long because he is a Chicago guy and, you know, he's excited that the Bears are doing well this season. That's fine. Whatever. But you know how I feel about Dwayne Wade. Like, couldn't care less. Like, whatever. He's, you know.
Were you mad that he walked into the United Center pregame and was wearing his own Bulls jersey?
Great troll job by him. Like, really, really fantastic. You know, yeah, of course it irked me a little bit because I still am so pissed about that stupid, idiotic decision to sign him in the first place and the fact that he played this organization like a flute. But guess what? That's, you know, that's not necessarily Dwayne Wade's fault that he used Garpax for, you know, as leverage against Riley and Mickey Arison in the Heat and ended up coming here and getting a truckload of money for one pretty insignificant, irrelevant season. Like, good on him. Bulls fans should be more mad at the front office than at D. Wade for doing that. But Like, whatever, dude. I don't care.
It was an excellent troll job. I will give him that.
It was a great troll job. Good for him.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, Matt, we're going to touch on the Timberwolves' loss to on Saturday. I want to get into Wendell Carter Jr. because he's been getting into a lot of foul trouble recently, and I want to just kind of touch on that and dive in deeper. Whether it's a matter of just not getting calls or if it's his positioning, his mindset so far, but we'll backtrack and go through the last five games or so with him, and then we'll preview the Spurs tonight. So stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up at 331-979-1369. Drop us a text message or a voicemail wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. So, Matt, before we get into the Timberwolves game really quickly, just to follow up on the Miami Heat loss, one thing that I'm noticing, and I think anybody watching these Bulls games in their entirety notices, that Wendell Carter Jr. has been struggling over the last, I don't know, I would say week or so. You know, not only being in foul trouble a ton, but it's been killing the Bulls too. Like we had just talked about with Felicio and Robin Lopez, it really has restricted what Fred Hoiberg can do once Wendell Carter Jr. gets in foul trouble. And you know, I even go back a couple games ago, the refs calling ticky-tack fouls on Wendell Carter Jr., not getting a whole lot of respect, and calling a lot of fouls in crunch time where, you know, other players with more experience probably wouldn't pick up those fouls. So again, Friday night, Wendell Carter Jr. fouls out. He only plays 14 minutes in this game. He had 6 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 blocks. So is this a mindset thing now that he feels like he's getting calls called on him left and right, that he's got to play it a little bit safer? What's going on that you're seeing from over the last maybe like 2 weeks or so?
I mean, to me, it's just a matter of a rookie who's being asked to do a lot of rim protecting, who's being asked to, you know, play help defense when he can, you know, switch defense when he can. And he is one of a very small number of teammates right now who actually understands most of what his job is on the defensive end. You're seeing Wendell get left out, like get hung out to dry plenty of times this season. You see him being one of the few guys who's actually giving consistent effort on the defensive end. That's going to lead to more fouls. And also, I mean, as is the case on Saturday night against the Timberwolves and Karl Anthony Towns, he is still very much so a young kid who has a lot to learn. Karl Anthony Towns abused Wendell on multiple possessions last night, and Towns had one of the best games of his season. Some of it is Wendell maybe getting some ticky-tack fouls called on him from the refs, and some of it's the fact that he's trying to do way more than the average Bulls player on the defensive end right now. And some of it's just growing pains, man. And, you know, it's not necessarily all that surprising to me.
What I don't understand, and maybe this goes along with the fact that he has been in foul trouble, so even early on, you know, you've seen having to see Fred Hoiberg rip him out of the game late first quarter. You know, even if he picks up that third foul in the second quarter, he's got to rip him right out of the game. You know, over the last three games, Wendell Carter Jr. has 5 fouls against Phoenix. He fouled out against Miami, and then he had 5 against Minnesota. So I'm looking at that, and I hope that doesn't change the mentality that he has going forward of being aggressive and going after guys. And, you know, I go back to the Phoenix game. He picked up 2 fouls in the fourth quarter that I honestly, frankly, think were bullshit. They were tic-tac fouls that a lot of, like 90% of the other guys in the league would not pick up. And so I wasn't a fan of seeing that. So I think it's a case of mixed of both. Wendell Carter Jr.'s mindset going into the games of, I can't pick up fouls early, and I also have to make sure that I can stay on the floor the last 6 minutes of the game. And, you know, a handful of these games, he hasn't been able to be on the floor for long stretches of time because he's picked up fouls like this. So on top of that, I'm a little bit concerned of his involvement with the offense, too. It's like some games in stretches of quarters, he goes completely unheard of. Nobody gives him an opportunity to shoot the ball. Nobody puts him in a position where he can find a way to score. And the Bulls are desperate at this point. Like we had mentioned in the first part of the show, LaVine, Parker, and Holiday, if none of them are productive at all, this game is a blowout. There is no offense whatsoever. So how do the Bulls get Wendell Carter Jr. involved in this offense? Because I feel like if you're looking around at this lineup, if it's anybody, I want Wendell Carter Jr. to get a little bit more involved because clearly you don't have anybody else who can shoot and score.
I mean, I think you're I think your expectations for Wendell's contributions on the offensive end are a little too high, Jordan. That's my opinion. I think coming into this rookie season, what we wanted to see most from Wendell was the rim protector and the guy who can help facilitate and is an underrated passer on the offensive end and can find looks for his teammates, can set good screens, and be a hustle guy. And he, like, clearly he has a significantly high ceiling on the offensive end, and it'll take some time to develop that. But he is limited in what he can do offensively right now. For a big man, shooting 47% from the field is not that great when you think most of Wendell's looks are coming inside. He has shown consistently time and again to have handle issues. He doesn't have great hands. He's not great at accepting passes near and around the basket. He's not great at going up near and around the basket. He's missing bunny layups. And that whole he shot 41% from behind the arc in college thing, yeah, that hasn't translated yet because he hasn't been taking a lot of threes. He's only taking just over one attempt per game, but he's hitting 22.7% of them. So I'm sorry, I think your offensive expectations for Wendell are just too high right now.
My question is, though, is like who else? Who else is taking those shots? Like, to me, that's fine if Parker, Holiday, and LaVine, like they did on Saturday night, are going to shoot 43 times compared to everybody else in the team who only shot 27. That's fine, but there's got to be a way to get Wendell Carter Jr. involved. Zach LaVine and Wendell Carter Jr. should be playing a two-man game. Should try to be figuring something out here because there is times where Wendell Carter Jr. had a ton of shot attempts already this season. I mean, go back to the game against Golden State. He had 13 attempts. Go back to Denver when he dropped 25 points. He had 21 attempts there. Then it kind of falls off. He goes to 10, 7, 9. Then he comes back against New Orleans, has a really good game with 17 points and 7 and 11 shooting, and then disappears for a couple games again. It's like the Bulls forget sometimes that he is actually out there on the floor. And I'm not saying he needs to take three-pointers or be the focal point of the offense, but there should be a way to get him involved more than they are right now. Because who else do you have? Like, you're going to rely on Antonio Blakeney coming off the bench scoring you points? You're going to rely on Ryan Arcidiacono to continue to score points for you? Like, at some point, Parker, LaVine, and Holiday are all not going to be hitting on a certain night. You're going to need somebody else to step up. And I'd like to see, whether it's for the good or the bad, I'd like to see just get him involved. Get Carter involved somehow. Because I think if you lose him there, you lose his defensive, you lose the prowess he has on defense. We talked about that with a lot of big men. It's like every time you don't get him involved, they feel less incumbent to come back and play defense for you. And I think it stretches the time. You need to give him a little bit of a confidence boost on the offensive end. So I don't know how they're going to do that, but maybe him and Zach LaVine finding a way to play a little bit of a two-man game can help Wendell Carter Jr. and alleviate a little bit of this offensive pressure that they
have. Well, I mean, Jordan, you just mentioned LaVine and Wendell doing a little two-man game. I can't wait for LaVine and Markkanen to have that kind of chemistry and that two-man game as an option when Markkanen comes back, because guess what? Defenses have to respect Markkanen because he proved last season as a rookie that he can step back and hit shots, and he's actually pretty decent as a guy rolling to the rim. Wendell has done neither so far. That's my point. The two-man game with LaVine, teams are doubling LaVine like crazy and leaving Wendell alone because guess what? He hasn't proven yet that he has the ability to consistently knock down a mid-range shot in a pick-and-pop situation, and he hasn't proven to have the hands and the finishing touch around the rim to be a lethal guy in pick-and-roll situations as a rim runner. That's why LaVine's getting doubled like crazy. Wendell hasn't proven to be effective in either kind of two-man game that he's been trying to play with LaVine. That's how I see it.
Just looking at Wendell Carter Jr.'s numbers right now, his shooting, when he's at the rim, he's 64.8% from the field on 38% assisted this year. That's his highest field goal percentage so far. When you start to get into his mid-range game, you're kind of right. You know, 3 to 10 feet from the rim, he's shooting 45%. 10 to 16 feet from the rim, which is like a pretty decent mid-range. He's only 37.5% from there. And as you keep getting away from the basket, the shooting percentage keeps getting lower. 31.8%, and then from three, he's shooting 22.7% this year. So I can understand that, and maybe that is a case. Maybe Wendell Carter Jr. Needs more improvement with setting picks and knowing where to be on the offensive side of the ball, and that's part of his development this year. You know, we talked about that in the summer. Is like, okay, we know the everything he can do on defense, but what can he do on offense? And we talked about maybe being overshadowed by Marvin Bagley, and that's fine. And there's been stretches where he's been able to score, but I think you're right too. And maybe that's just a case of going back to, once we get all these guys back healthy, it'll alleviate some stuff, and then maybe it'll open some things up for Wendell Carter Jr. But as far as just dumbing it completely down, Matt, if you had to pick somebody on this team, because frankly, we're probably not going to see Markkanen for another couple weeks. That's just a plain fact. If we don't see him for a couple weeks, we don't see Portis and Dunn till the middle, late December. You're still going to need other options to score on this team. So is there a way to get him involved outside of maybe him and Levine playing a two-man game to help some of this offense that's so desperately depleted
right now?
I mean,
if whoever the primary ball handler is finds Wendell open and Wendell actually starts proving that he needs to be guarded, then we might get a nice stretch of games offensively from Wendell until teams start to pay attention to him on the defensive end. But until he actually looks like a realistic threat, And not a Butterfingers rookie who's making, you know, silly mistakes out there, then no. I mean, look, it's not like I love Holiday jacking up 15 to 20 shots a game. It's not that I really love Jabari jacking up 15 to 20 shots a game. But they are more offensively gifted right now than Wendell, and there's no debating that.
The other thing that I'm interested in, too, just looking at his quarter splits, he's getting by far the most attempts in the first quarter that he's taking. And I like the fact that they're trying to get him involved early, and that's great. And maybe there's times where he, you know, goes out to a start of 0-3 or 0-4 from shooting, and maybe they go away from him there. So I'm looking at second quarter, and he's not on the floor for all that much of the second quarter, but taking the least amount of shots in the second and the fourth quarter. He only 17 shots this year in the fourth quarter, and I think that's a combination of him not being able to stay on the floor, and that too of Levine and or Holiday just trying to chuck up shots at the end to catch up or to keep a lead. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what the Bulls need to do, but I know for a fact that looking at right now, this offense and it being stagnated at times, it's like, get Carter involved. And I don't know how they're going to do that, but they need to get him involved. At least I'd like to see that from his improvement standpoint. So on to this Timberwolves game, though, that's kind of relaying back to what we were talking about originally. This Timberwolves game, 111-96, the Bulls fall in Minnesota. Another classic case of, like I had mentioned before, between Levine, Holiday, and Parker, they took 43 shots in this game to oppose everybody else on the Bulls team to 27 shots. Anything that you can take away from this game, Matt, positive?
Positive?
Before we get into some of the negatives.
Positive. You know, Jabari had a decent game. I think, you know, this was probably one of his more efficient offensive games. 27 points on 11 of 18. He hit 3 of his 5 shots from behind the arc. Grabbed 7 rebounds, so he did his part there. And 4 assists. 4 assists that were really nice passes. He had that one bullet, like pretty much full court pass to Levine, who, you know, broke out once the Bulls got the stop. That was really nice to see. It actually looked, more so than I have seen in like any other game, Jabari played within the structure of this team's offense as opposed to playing as one guy going ISO in situations. He was, you know, knocking down shots that came off of nice passes from his teammates, and he set up his teammates a few times as well. And guess what? He actually a couple of times looked like he gave a damn on the defensive end, which is nice to see. So there, I mean, that's far and away my best positive from that game, is that Jabari didn't look like complete and total crap.
I think Levine's 28 points and getting to the line, 10 of 12 from the line, too, is another thing, too, to keep the Bulls in games. Like, you go back to Friday night's game, Levine only attempted 2 free throws the entire game. So I think that's kind of a positive you can take away, 28 points there. And then you had mentioned, yeah, Jabari Parker's pretty nice game, 27-7-4, 2 steals and a block, too. But I just got to ask you this question. Am I dumb, or am I being led astray by this Bulls team? Because how do you let 2 starters go 1-for-30 from the field and you still find a way to end up losing by double digits? Like how does that happen? How do you let opponents go 1-for-30 between Covington and Wiggins? 1-for-30. And you still end up losing the game. The Timberwolves shot 20.6%, 7 of 34 from 3, and you still lost by 15. How the hell does that happen?
You know why? You know how? Look at the stat line for Karl Anthony Towns. 35 and 22. 9 of those 22 came on the offensive end. When Towns didn't hit his initial shot, getting whatever look he wanted in the paint, he got the rebound of his miss and put in the second one. That is what happened all night. I mentioned, you know, talking about this bench that the Bulls are dealing with right now, especially in the absence of Hutch, which good news there. We just got an update. He will be available tonight. So hopefully that means the end of campaign minutes and the super small lineups that Fred has had to use. But when the Bulls go super small like that, they get beat up on the boards. They got out rebounded by the Wolves 58-40. 58-40. And 21 of those 58 came on the offensive end. Second chance points all night long for the Timberwolves. That is how two of your starters combined to shoot one of 30 from the field, and you still win comfortably. The Wolves got every single look they wanted in the paint from the Bull, against the Bulls on Saturday, and when they didn't make their first inside easy look, they got the rebound and put it back in.
I was going to say, I noticed Dario Saric, man. The entire game, it seemed like anytime a shot went up, he followed the shot right back. If it hadn't missed, he put it right back in for an easy bucket. He ended up with 19 points, 14 rebounds in 25 minutes. And then you had mentioned Karl Anthony Towns with the 35 and 22. Like, getting out-rebounded that badly and the easy second-chance points that the Bulls were giving up, like, you have no shot. And I was blown away the fact that it's, you let two guys on that other team shoot one for 30, and you still lost by 15 points. And there was a critical stretch in that fourth quarter where the Bulls didn't score a bucket for what seemed like 5-6 minutes straight, where they were struggling to find a basket. And then the Wolves quickly crept up from like a lead about 4-6 to all of a sudden it was ballooned to 12 to 15 points, and that was pretty much sealed the deal for the Bulls. But I thought, as much as we talked about the second quarter that the Bulls had on Friday nights, they came back and bounced back pretty good. You know, scored 28 points, shot pretty good in the second quarter, and actually made a decent game of this in the first half. And then the turnaround was the fourth quarter where they couldn't hit shots. Guys were stagnated, and it just didn't look good. But I think that, too, is another main problem for this Bulls team, and it's going to be until you get your big men back, is the fact that you're getting out-rebounded left and right. We just talked about Friday night, they out-rebounded the Miami Heat, still lost, and then they just got dominated on the boards on Saturday. So
I mean,
I don't know what the solution is for that.
I mean, we were talking about it earlier. They had a really bad quarter against the Heat, and they've had really bad quarters in losses against the Celtics, against the Bucks. Like they've just had that as a problem all season long, where one quarter they play like complete crap. And it's usually been the second or the third quarter. But on Saturday night against Minnesota, it was the fourth. They actually came into the fourth quarter only trailing by five, very much in this game, within reach. And in the fourth quarter, the Bulls shoot 4 of 16 from the field and turn the ball over five times. You're not winning a game with that kind of performance in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they went on a stretch of just over 5.5 minutes and only scoring 1 point. It was a free throw. Robin Lopez had made it two in the first 2 minutes of the game, and then they hadn't scored till the 5:35 minute marker in the fourth quarter. And by that time, the Timberwolves were up 16. So I don't know how Fred Hoiberg fixes that, and that's one of the many problems this Bulls team is having, is even if they put together a good three quarters, they struggle in the fourth. They struggle to close out games, to hang around, and it goes back to the offense. It's like you try to suck as much as you can out of LaVine and Parker and Holiday, but when those shots aren't hitting in the fourth quarter, then you virtually have nobody out there that can knock down a bucket. So,
you know how Fred fixes that?
How?
With a resignation letter and a stiff whiskey. That's how. that's how. That dude is miserable.
I feel bad whoever takes over the job, though. If he ends up getting canned before the season's over, and he doesn't even get a look at the guys that are injured right now and doesn't get a chance there. Like, I don't know what to say for the next coach that's going to come in here, if it is mid-season for him. But tonight, we've got a matchup real quick against the Spurs. The Spurs coming in just under 500 at 9-10. Talk about point guard issues, Matt. You know, the Bulls have had their fair share of point guard issues this year, but the San Antonio Spurs have lost three main starting guards to their team before the season even started, and they've had point guard issues of their own. I mean, Patty Mills has been trying to hold things up for them, but outside of that, they're in desperate need, and they're the one of the many teams that are thrown to the rumor mill. Anytime a point guard comes available, it's like, oh, maybe San Antonio will trade for him. But going into this game tonight, you got to stop DeMar DeRozan. How do the Bulls do that?
It's going to be a tough task. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get a fun DeRozan versus LaVine shootout tonight, and LaVine can look like the more deadly and clutch offensive player. DeRozan's never really had the clutch gene as much of a scorer as he's been. LaVine, this season, it seems like any time he's got the ball with under a minute in a close game, the ball slips out of his hands or he misses the shot. So this could be an interesting storyline tonight. Is if this Bulls-Spurs game stays close late, does Zach LaVine make a clutch shot or a clutch play? Does DeMar DeRozan do that, or does one of them screw up the opportunity to do that? As far as slowing down DeRozan, you know, can we see Zach LaVine put in some good minutes on, you know, of effort on the defensive end, trying to do what he can against DeRozan, and also have a strong night offensively? Because I feel like, you know, when Zach gives a significant effort on the defensive end or draws a tough assignment on the defensive end so far this season, good for him for you know, upping his effort levels, but he still is a shorthanded defender. He is not that great, and sometimes it can affect his offensive game. We've seen that happen so far this season. DeRozan's been great. I think he's averaging like 24, 6, and 6 for the Spurs so far. Overall, this Spurs team has, as you said, not had a great time dealing with all these injuries. DeJounte Murray was a big loss. Lonnie Walker has been out. Pau Gasol, old as he is, still all ever effective in his couple of seasons with the Spurs, also out. They're asking DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge to do a lot for this team right now. They have not had a great stretch. I think they've lost like 6 of their last 8 and in the middle of a road trip coming to Chicago tonight. So I think the Bulls certainly have a shot to stay in this game.
Yeah, I agree. And Pau Gasol being out tonight with a foot injury, coming off the bench should help the Bulls at least a little bit. You'd mentioned DeJounte Murray and Lonnie Walker both being out. It's given an opportunity for guys like Bryn Forbes to step up. And Patty Mills, too, he hasn't started a game yet. It's been Bryn Forbes all the way. Playing 28.6 minutes, not doing too bad off the bench, 12.9 points, 1.8 rebounds, 2.2 assists, and then Patty Mills coming in and doing most of the distributing. That's been kind of the key here, is that the outside of DeRozan, it's been pretty dim as far as their distribution goes. You know, DeRozan's coming in 6.3 assists per game, and then everybody else is under 2.5. So looking at that and missing one of their other guys that are key to that second unit, and Pau Gasol kind of running things, might cause some problems for the Spurs tonight. So we'll see. But you got to eliminate DeMar DeRozan coming in here and dropping 30-plus. If he does that, I don't see how this Bulls team, even as depleted as the Spurs team is, I don't see how they hang into this one. And another key stat for you real quick is the Spurs coming into this game, while they're 9-10, are number one in turnovers in the entire league. They give up the fewest turnovers per game at 11.9 this season. And they're also shooting the best in the entire league so far this season in three-point percentage at 38.8%. Now, while they don't take a whole ton of threes, they're 24.3, shooting 38.3% tonight. So look for that as a factor, too, is if how the Bulls can stop the perimeter offense from the Spurs. And if they start to get going early, this could get kind of out of hand. So we'll see. But I'm hoping, with Pau Gasol being out, being a little bit depleted by the Spurs team going losing 6 of their last 8, that maybe the Bulls will hang around in this one for longer than a half.
Yeah, and the other thing I'm looking for tonight is, do we see another solid effort from Jabari Parker? He's put in 20-plus points in, I think, what, like 4 of his last 5 games, something like that, maybe even 5 of his last 6. And not only coming in junk time, but in games where he was like the Miami Heat game, trying to get the Bulls back in it. So obviously you're going to need a big night from LaVine. It would be nice if Holiday had one of his good nights as opposed to his bad nights. Holiday had a really rough shooting night on Saturday after going 5 of 10 from downtown on Friday. So The Bulls will need some role players to chip in. Blakeney's been putrid off the bench recently. And, hey, the good news, Chandler Hutchison expected to be back in that rotation tonight, which should also mean no more campaign. So that's all kinds of good news.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us a text, a voicemail, whatever it is, we'd love to hear from you. 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com. And the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. Enjoy Spurs and Bulls tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com